This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Darius Thomas.
Should be good.
And Karina Anglada.
Of course, I mixed up my calendar. Today's guest got her start working in an unexpected way while she was a student athlete for Cal Gymnastics. Due to circumstances outside of her control, the Minnesota native had to pivot, both literally and figuratively. Tune in to hear how Malia Pearson went from gymnastics events like bars and floor to the front office as a lifestyle content producer with the Minnesota Vikings.
All right, I'm there. What time?
Oh, I clicked off of it. That's how... Hold on. Oh, 22. So bad. So bad.
Do you have an interest in adding motion design to your skill set, but just aren't sure where to start?
Let's go!
Welcome to Baller FX, your source for sports content and motion tutorials. From tips and tricks to long-form tutorials and project deep dives, there's a lot to take in. There's even a free mini-course playlist called How to Animate Sports for Social. This playlist will take you step-by-step through the process of creating a 5-second animated player stat graphic. For your sport-specific motion training, visit BallerFX on YouTube and get started today. Joining us today, we have Malia Pearson, a lifestyle content producer with the Minnesota Vikings. Malia, thanks so much for taking the time to hop on and share your journey and experience with us here today.
Yeah, I'm excited. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Can you start off by giving us a little background on how you got into sports and why you wanted to be in sports?
Yeah. So I grew up doing gymnastics. I did gymnastics my whole life, got a scholarship to Cal Berkeley, and went into Cal wanting to, I feel like I didn't really know all the options that were out there in terms of careers. So I started off as like a biology major, I think, or like something along those lines. And, you know, those math and science classes at Berkeley are a bit of a challenge, and I was getting through it, but I just didn't really like love it. And unfortunately at the time, but looking back, I guess it's a good thing that it happened, but I busted up my knee and I was not able to compete my freshman year of college for the Cal Gymnastics team. And my coach was like, well, can you do our social media for meet days? And it was basically just like Instagram stories back then. And I was like, okay, I guess. And so I started doing that. And then through there, some video producers within the Cal Athletic Department were like, hey, you kind of have an eye for this. Would you want to do an internship with us? And I was like, okay, sure, whatever. And again, back to like the bio thing, was getting through it, but not like loving it, wasn't super passionate about it. And I was talking to an academic advisor and she was like, well, you seem to be really good at this like media stuff. Would you want to major in media studies? And I was like, yeah, actually. So switched my major and kept interning in the Cal Athletic Department. And, you know, expanding my video craft as well as like social and digital marketing. And then, you know, through that, really realized how many like different career options in sports and in creative there were. And I was about to graduate college, I was just applying to lots of different jobs in sports and ended up with the New Orleans Saints and Pelicans as the social media associate. And then, you know, life moved on and had the opportunity to come back home to Minnesota and be a full-time video producer for the Vikings. And yeah, now I'm a lifestyle content producer for the Vikings and I love it.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Jinx.
Did you end up going back to gymnastics and doing gymnastics for the last couple of years, or were you like, ooh, I found something. Injury was a blessing in disguise, maybe, that you found what you wanted to do and started pursuing that a little bit more?
Yeah, so the injury was definitely a blessing in disguise. I had some previous knee injuries, and essentially, I like came back to probably like 70% strength and was like kind of struggling through it. So then after my sophomore year of college, I decided to medically retire. And that's when I became a student coach on the Cal Gymnastics team and then kind of took over, I think, basically all of our like social and digital media. I think that was like my junior and senior year. And then COVID hit my junior year. So that kind of, you know, changed things. But yeah, kind of returned to gymnastics, but not fully, but definitely stayed involved, heavily involved in the team all 4 years while I was at Cal.
Awesome.
Yeah, I actually do have a question that I've been thinking a lot about is, right, as an athlete, there's a level of creativity that you have to have. There's a level of work ethic that you need to employ on a day-to-day basis. And with your gymnastics background, do you carry any of that into the work you do now as a creative?
Oh, for sure. I think the work ethic, like you mentioned, is really that the main thing that kind of rolls into my professional career. I feel like I'm always kind of like coming up with what can I do more? What can I do differently? What am I going to do to make myself and my content stand out rather than kind of getting into almost like a routine of like, oh, this is what we've always done. You know, it performs fine. So I would definitely say the work ethic carries over, but then also like the time management and I don't know, while I was in college, everyone's like, oh, everyone loves athletes. Like they're, you know, super, super good with time management and work ethic and like all these skills that transfer into real life, which is, very much true. So then it's, I would say all, like I said, the time management is a big thing. And then also kind of knowing when to push yourself versus when to take time off. So right now we're in the off season and I am doing significantly less than what I do, you know, week to week during the NFL season. And it's, you know, that's just a way I know myself and I know my body and my, you know, my mental. So I know that this is the time to relax, take care of myself, recharge for next season. So, yeah.
What do you do to relax in the off season? I feel like that's like, it's kind of like the glory days where it's like your schedule isn't jam-packed constantly, but what are you doing to, you know, relax, to, you know, any hobbies?
Yeah, I travel a lot. I really like to travel, whether that be for work or just for pleasure. I was in Mexico, LA, just getting out of the Minnesota cold. And then also I really like to tap into college gymnastics. This is the college gymnastics season. So while I was in LA, went to a UCLA meet, I was just in Berkeley last weekend and got to go to a Cal gymnastics meet. And then, you know, just watching mainly NCAA gymnastics, but watching like pretty much all sports that aren't football. And almost just kind of like taking my mind off of, work is how I relax.
Who you got? I just went to my first Georgia gymnastics meet, Gym Dogs meet. So that was awesome. They went up against Auburn. So that was fun. Who do you have? Who's in your top right now? Obviously Cal. Let's take them out since that's your alma mater. But who is top of mind? And if you want to put them at top, that's fine too.
So no, I'm gonna put Cal Gymnastics at the top because we are the number three team in the country. We are very, very, very well Respect. Contenders for the national title.
Love it.
Which is crazy and exciting. We've been, I keep saying we, the team now has been breaking record after record and, you know, really in there competing and contending, which is super exciting. Because we've always been around, I think, not always, but in the past probably 5 to 10 years, we've been in the ranked between 5 to 10 to 12. And now we're like really consistently in the top five. So that's exciting.
Awesome.
But then, you know, I have to give it to Oklahoma. Oklahoma is stellar. Anyone that knows even mm-hmm. half a thing about NCAA gymnastics knows that Oklahoma is the team to beat.
Powerhouse. Yeah.
Yeah. So I always love watching their gymnastics. But then also like LSU, they've never won a national title and they're
close.
I think they're number two. So it goes Oklahoma, LSU, Cal, and all three of those teams are teams to look out for. And then, you know, in the postseason. I mean, it's going to be an exciting postseason because there's realistically probably 10 to 15 teams that are good enough to, you know, be in that national championship conversation. So it's always exciting.
Sticking with that for a second, just like many women's sports, obviously we're in Women's History Month, but college gymnastics has really started to like blossom and go viral, mostly UCLA because they, I mean, I don't know how they continuously find, you know, athletes that, you know, put on a show that can go viral. But as a former gymnast, how does that make you feel looking at the sport now to where a lot of more eyeballs are on that sport in particular?
Ooh, it is so exciting. Like, you can get me talk about NCAA gymnastics. I just love it. And like you mentioned UCLA, the head coach at UCLA was the assistant coach at Cal while I was there. So shout out to Janelle. She's killing it at UCLA. But I mean, I just love it. I feel like in the past, you know, however many decades, it's always just been every 4 years at the Olympics. And then obviously USA Gymnastics at the Olympics has been dominating for the past couple of decades. I and the gymnastics community has always said, you can see this high level, exciting gymnastics every year within the NCAA, because the NCAA is always, you know, very, very high level. So it's just super, super exciting and rewarding to see people finally like realizing like, oh, I can get dang near Olympic level gymnastics every weekend from January to April, at my local, you know, college or university. So I just love it. And it's so exciting. And I love seeing the stats of like how well people are, you know, performing and how many eyes are on the sport, because obviously it's a beautiful and difficult and awesome sport. And I'm glad it's finally kind of getting its flowers.
Yeah, yeah. You have to be pretty creative in that sport as well, especially on the floor.
Oh, for sure.
So, yeah, what's your favorite event?
My favorite event to train was always bars, but to compete was always floor, because like you said, with the creative and the performance.
And to watch? What about to watch now that you're...
Okay, this might be a hot take, but I really don't like watching beam and floor because the routines are just a little too long. It's almost like too performative for me. Mm-hmm. I just love like the actual gymnastics. So I love watching vault and bars because it's quick. It's all gymnastics. And, you know, especially with vault and bars, the routines are fairly similar. So to be that like extra level of good, there's just like a little, you know, something extra to like look out for. So like the landings and the handstands and the little details. I've always loved bars specifically. So
I'm team floor. I'm team floor. I love floor. It's like a combination of all of it. And I think the performance aspect is a lot of fun. But I love what you mentioned too about like seeing Olympic level athletes. Like you can go in wherever city you're in, if you're at a, you know, local university or college town. It sparked a thought about how Suni Lee decided to attend Auburn University and get that college experience and, you know, be a collegiate gymnast, even though she's an Olympian too. I feel like I'm with you on just like being excited that it's more accessible to people and there's more eyes being drawn to the women's women's sports just in general, right? Because for me, like gymnasts are the ultimate athlete, right? Like they can be delicate and graceful and powerful all at the same time. Like it's such a beautiful and powerful sport to me. I love hearing your intake. And no such thing as a hot take on this podcast. We love any and all takes. So
except cold takes.
Yeah, except cold takes. We like hot takes, not cold ones.
Just from being a gymnast, how did you learn to cover the sport that you participated in? Is there any tips or any ways that you approach all the different disciplines, I guess the best way to say it?
Yeah.
All the different exercises that they go through.
Yeah, that's a good question. I wouldn't say I ever, like, I feel like it came fairly naturally how to cover the sport of gymnastics, because I think there's, you know, watching gymnastics when you are a, you know, high level gymnast and gym fan, you can be fairly critical when, you know, maybe a handstand is definitely not hit and the commentator's like, oh, like great handstand. And everyone's watching. It's like, that was not a good handstand. Like love whoever the athlete was, but she did not hit her handstand. So I feel like, there wasn't necessarily a learning curve. It came fairly naturally to me, because I can highlight the really, really good things. And especially in college gymnastics, there's a whole lot of good things. So that was like kind of easy. And I don't want to say ignore the bad things, but like there's just so much good to highlight that you can focus on the good. And for each like discipline specifically, I think kind of like I said, it almost came naturally to me, because when you're watching, let's say, let's keep going back to bars, there's a whole lot that goes into a bar routine. And to almost like the naked eye, it's like, okay, does she stay on the bar and stick the dismount? Yes. But what sets apart staying on the bars and sticking a dismount to other routines? And from training day in and day out, I know it's the little stuff of hitting and holding your handstand, making sure you're extending your hips on your kips, amplitude on all of your releases, body position in handstands. Like there's so many little things. And I always liked to kind of highlight those little things to not only like teach the people who may not know, be like, oh my gosh, just what, like posting a set of kip handstands and she's hitting 3-4 handstands in a row. People who don't know might be like, okay, why are we watching this? But to gym fans, it's like, wow, not only is she hitting her handstands, but she just hit 4 in a row. Like that's really impressive. Mm-hmm. So that's kind
were
of
you,
how
were
I
were you vlogging kind of, or were you capturing on your phone? What was that?
Yeah, I was literally just on Instagram stories. So it was with my phone. And it was a lot during warmups. And then little, you know, probably like a couple of routines here and there during the competition, in the beginning. And then once I took over like all of Cal Gymnastics socials, it was Twitter and like live cutting and stuff like that. It was more on the social side and less on the like vlogging creative. But I think actually I did get into more of the video side, I think my junior year. But like I said, the pandemic hit. So that kind of messed things up a little bit. But yeah.
That breakdown is helpful because I think, you know, for folks that I did gymnastics for one summer and that doesn't count. Right. But even all the terminology, like the kips and like a perfect handstand and making sure that it's like a beautiful line, right? Like nothing, you know, behind the bar, over the bar, right? Like that stuff matters. And I think the details matter for even, you know, your casual fans, but also your like hardcore, you know, gym fans. So that breakdown is very, very helpful.
Look at you knowing your gymnastics.
I try. I love gymnastics. Like
it's a great sport.
It is like, amazing.
You go to one meet and like, you don't have to know what is going on. It's just the energy in that, you know, in the arena or in the, you know, Coliseum or wherever you are. Like I spent 4 years at Georgia and just going to one. And it's like, these people are insanely into this. So even as a gymnast, like as you did gymnastics your whole life, you know, up through college, growing up, did you see this? Like, did you see it as a creative thing or was it more just like the sport?
I think consciously it was just the sport, but now I can like look back and see that part of it was creative. I mean, especially when I was doing the sport, I loved choreography on both beam and floor. And the performance and like, I considered myself to be like a pretty good dancer. So choreographing my floor routines was always like a collaborative effort. And, you know, things change. You know, if you mess up, you have to cover things up. And sometimes you have to be like creative on your feet. And that's kind of on maybe not vault, but even on bars too. You know, if you cast over, you have to figure out a way to stay on the bar. So that could be pirouette, blind swing, half, keep going, or whatever. So I never thought of it as creative while I was doing it. But now, like with hindsight, it definitely, you know, you have to have a level of creativity because it's not just like XYZ, do the same thing over and over, even though that's kind of the goal. But like you have to think on your feet, kind of like with all sports, I think.
Yeah. It's always interesting talking to former athletes to see how they, you know, mentally transition or even physically. What was that journey like and what were you picking up along the way?
The transition from sport to like professional.
Yep.
Well, for me, I think the transition was definitely not easy, but probably easier than others because I knew, like I said, I medically retired after my sophomore year, but probably my entire sophomore year, I knew that this like was not really working out. And the like my knee just like couldn't handle what I was asking it to do. So I had a few months and I ended up retiring, I think like the week of official practice my junior year, which is in like September. So I want to say like the whole summer, I kind of knew that I was going to retire once the voluntary practices were over. So I definitely had time to like figure it out. And I also knew that I was going to stay with the team as a student coach and, you know, working in the creative services. So that was like a fairly smooth transition, you know, because I still got to be at practice every day with the girls and, you know, I was still living with my teammates and seeing them every weekend. But then going into the professional, like when I started my job with the Saints and Pelicans, that was almost, I don't want to say hard, but like weird for me because I was so used to my college schedule was I would get up at 6, work out on my own until like 7:30 or something, and then go to the gym practice from 8 to 11 or noon or something, be in class all day, study all night, you know, until like 10, 11 p.m. and then do it all the next day. So going into my professional career, it was weird kind of just working, you know, 9 to 5-ish plus the games kind of depending on the day. And, you know, if it's like an average Wednesday with no events or games going on, it's kind of like, hey, what do I do from like 5 to 10 or 11 p.m.? And I always was a workout in the morning person. So I would work out still at like 7, 6, 7 a.m. before work. So that was definitely weird. I felt like I was like wasting time and I wanted to like prioritize my time. Like I wasn't going to work all day and then, you know, keep working all night. So it was like, okay, what do I do? And you know, it ebbs and flows. Like I'm definitely a lot better now. I'm like 3 years out of college. But still sometimes I'm like, dang, I have like all night. What do I do? And sometimes it's just sit and watch reality TV. But other times, you know, I still like to create on the side. Like I love, I like to paint my shoes sometimes here and there. I like to go to Goodwill and try and like upcycle clothing and be kind of handsy. I like to work on puzzles. But yeah, I think I'm still trying to figure out, you know, exactly what to do with all this time because my whole life it was school and gym that would take up all of my day pretty much.
What's top of the list right now for your reality TV?
Well, I mean, obviously Love is Blind season 6. That's been a really fun journey. So that's where I spend my time. But then also I love Love Island UK, but I don't have like the VPN or whatever to like watch it live. But Love Island All Stars is on Peacock. So I've gotten into that with, you know, all my UK people from previous series, which is fun.
Nice.
You moved from Minnesota, growing up there.
I like how Darius just like moves on.
Oh.
He's like, okay, cool.
No, like, I was going to tie it in. You went quiet, so I was like, wait a minute.
Oh, no, no, no. I had to sneeze
like real bad. So, how was that living in New Orleans for that time? Like, you had lived in Minnesota, you had lived in California, totally different places from New Orleans. What was that like for you?
Well, I'll backtrack a little and say I grew up in like a very white, upper middle class suburb of Minnesota. And then Berkeley, while not diverse like New Orleans, is still very diverse. Like two of my college roommates, it was the three of us, and I was the only American. And, you know, so I got to learn a lot from people all across the world. And obviously, like, the Bay Area is very diverse, and so is Berkeley. But going to New Orleans is very different because I feel like the Bay Area is like a mixing pot of people from throughout the world, which is really diverse and, you know, beneficial and important. But New Orleans is a diverse culture of itself, and not necessarily like a melting pot. So going to New Orleans was definitely very different from kind of everything, like weather, culture, food, like the nightlife, really everything was really different. But I felt like at that point in my life, I was super excited to go down to New Orleans and experience a you know, culture that honestly resembles more so of not how I grew up, but like how I identify. And there was a lot more people that looked like me down in New Orleans than I had ever seen before. So it was definitely different, but it wasn't like hard for me. I feel like I just went down there and was so open-minded and excited about the opportunity and about both the job opportunity and the city, that, you know, I was just embracing and learning as much as I could while I was there. So it was a lot of fun.
I think from what I understand, that's an interesting team to work for because they have NFL and NBA in the same house, so to speak, I guess. Can you talk through what your responsibilities were down there and what a day-to-day looked like for you?
Yeah, so I moved to New Orleans in July of 2021. So that was still COVID-y. I worked from home from July until, I think, January. We finally went back into the office. So my first time in the office at the Saints and Bells was, you know, 6-7 months into my job there. But yeah, interesting that it is under the same house. So it was chaotic, but it was probably like the best first job in sports right out of college experience ever, just because I got to learn a lot about both football and basketball and the leagues and the coaches and the history. And especially in New Orleans, like the Saints, in my mind, the Saints is a very different culture than the Pelicans. So I really, you know, it was almost like two different jobs in one, which was awesome. And day to day, I was technically the social media associate for the Saints and then would help out with the Pelicans. Like, I don't really want to say on the side because I still did a lot with the Pelicans, especially once the Saints were done with the season. And the Pelicans were like in full force. But it would be a couple of meetings a day, like content strategy. And then I was really using that time to expand my video and graphic design skills. So my boss would, shout out Alex Restrepo, he would say, okay, Malia, we need to post a Cam Jordan birthday graphic, and let's do some Cam Jordan highlights today. and, you know, I could just pull that and post it, whatever, or I could, you know, put together a whole highlight video for Cam Jordan, which is usually kind of like what I tried to do. So basically I was given an assignment and then it was up to me how, to what level I wanted to execute that assignment. So it was awesome. I had a lot of freedom to try new things, and a lot of, you know, good resources to try and learn new things. So, yeah, it was a lot. It was a lot for sure. I'm glad to be with one team now, but it was an awesome, awesome first experience.
So you started as a video producer at the Vikings, right?
Yes.
So what was that like, being, like you said, you went from two teams to now one team, but then transitioning out of the just social media to them being a video producer. Was there any change? Was it more of the same? What was that like?
So as I was about to graduate from college, I truly think deep down I knew I wanted to be a video producer, but I had more experience in social. So I was applying to both social jobs and video jobs, and I was kind of like, God will tell me where I need to go. Mm-hmm. And kind of like what I was saying with the Saints and Pelicans job, it was social, but I had a lot of opportunity to do video and get better with video. And the job came up at the Vikings. At this point, I knew that I wanted to do video production full time. And this job came up with the Vikings, and it was lifestyle content associate. Read more about it, and it was basically video producer, but for everything that isn't football, so off the field stuff. And which is, I like read the job description, I was like, this job was made for me, because I love working in sports, but I'm not a huge like football geek. Like, I really like, you know, the athletes as people more so. So I, you know, applied for that job, and it was, my first year with the Vikings was tough because it was a brand new position. So nobody had done it before. And I feel like a lot of my coworkers and myself was kind of like, okay, what's Malia doing here? Because I think they had an idea of like, oh, we're going to have this producer for off-field content. But then past that, it wasn't super ironed out. So I was really paving my own path, and a path that I could go on was more of like social video. So I do long form videos on YouTube, kind of like documentary style, but I do those a lot less frequently than I do just like quick videos on social, regarding our players and their families and, you know, anything helmets off content. So the transition was difficult in that sense that there wasn't like a blueprint of like what I should be doing and how and when, but in terms of like the actual like job and the like technical stuff, it was super easy for me because I had all of the video skill sets, knew what performed well on social from my social background, but got to do 100% of what I loved in social, which was the video production aspect. I got to do that 100% rather than, you know, 60% of the time when I was in social as well. So.
That's, yes. I love that because I feel like I hear that some, that a lot of people on social are social focused, and seems like there's a difference between a content social creator and a social media specialist. At least that's the that's what I get from people's posts and different things. So it's awesome to hear that your experience you felt was beneficial to have that background, but also be able to pull in the social and know what works and use that as your creator side. So I love to hear that background.
Yeah, 100% works out the way it, you know, the way it supposed to, and it should, because I don't think I would have that you know, viewpoint if I didn't do, you know, a year of social before this job. So,
yeah, I was about to say that you kind of got a cheat code to be able to know what works, because those are two very different disciplines, as Justin put it, you know, knowing the social side of it, but also learning the production and value side of quality content. So how do you kind of encourage or influence that through the rest of your teammates at the Vikings?
Yeah, it's a work in progress, because the way the Vikings is set up, we have like our original content team, which is more of like the highly produced content. And then our like social digital team, which I am on, kind of by happenstance. And, yeah, so it's working with people who, you know, want to learn and communicating like what performs well and why. So we've done a lot, like our original team, original content team, they do all of our like mic'd ups for the players in field access. And that's not necessarily off the field stuff, but it performs well on social. I always say if edited correctly, because I think specifically with like vertical content and TikTok, I mean, Gen Z's attention span is very short. And I consider myself to be Gen Z. I am in that age range. There's so much, I could talk about this and go many different directions. There's so much content in so many sports. So if we, as the Vikings, want to stand out in both the sports and the content area, we have to do something that is going to stand out and be different. And that is a lot through our editing and what we post, and what we choose to post. So obviously a game is 4 or 5 hours long, and they have that much footage of a guy mic'd up. They cut it for YouTube and for our, I guess, longer fan base of audiences for YouTube. And then they send it to us and we go through it and we're like, okay, I'm trying to think of a example. Kirk, they mic'd him up for training camp. And he did this spiel on Drake and like how we always play Drake during practice. And he's like, oh my gosh. And I saw that and I was like, okay, that's going to perform really well because Gen Z really likes Drake. They like Kirk Cousins and his, you know, antics. So yeah, we cut it up. And then through that, showing them like, okay, this is what's going to work really well. I've seen them be like, okay, like, would this clip work really well? And it's like, yeah. And then sometimes it's like, okay, well, we have to cut out the dead space because it needs to be a little choppier and quicker for TikTok. But it's basically just like showing and teaching and seeing all the great content, highly produced, long form content that they produce, and then being like, okay, we want this specific 2 or 3 minute clip. And maybe we have to edit it down even shorter, but like showing them what they're already doing is great, but we just need it tweaked a little bit for it to hit on social. That's kind of how we're getting there to have everyone, hopefully, eyeing towards the same goal of like getting those new fans and making sure our content is hitting as many audiences as possible and as many audiences as we like want them to be.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's the idea of the do it once and repurpose it across as many different channels as possible, but they all have different needs, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, and with that, you know, a lot of times you brought up Gen Z and, you know, the short attention spans and all that. But how do you, from a perspective of knowing that there are different buckets of fans, like how do you as an organization kind of say, okay, yeah, well, this is what works for Gen Z, but you know, kind of keeping all of it in to say we can still do long form, because long form definitely isn't dead as much as some people like to say that it is, but hitting all the buckets of fans. Because I feel like the Vikings do a great job of like different types of content.
Yeah. So we have a big, not necessarily production team. I think we do have a bigger production team than most NFL teams, but we have a lot of people working on a lot of different stuff. So my job is like primarily focused on like female fans in Gen Z, but there's, you know, other of my coworkers' jobs is more focused on, you know, our older fan base. And at the Vikings, we have, we call them fan personas, which is basically like grouping our fans. And I don't exactly know the history, but I do know it's like fairly newer in our, awesome like data analytics business strategy team is like constantly revitalizing those fan personas. But for instance, we have our fan line Fran, and he is mostly our older demographic that knows all of the Vikings history and really, really is in tune with the X's and O's. And like, he's going to be the person that is interacting with when we are posting about our 1998 season and all the good things that happened that season. I wasn't alive for the 1998 season, so it's not flowing.
But, thanks for making us feel old.
Sorry.
Thank you for calling out the old guys.
So, well, I should have used like the 70s, Bud Grant, and like last year when Coach Bud Grant died, we had so much stuff going out, and those, the friends that we call them, was interacting with all of it and loving all of it. Because that's, you know, their Minnesota Vikings. And then we have our sidekick Sally fan persona that is not necessarily super interested in football, maybe a wife of somebody that is really interested in football, but likes going for like the social aspect. So that's like a lot of the content I make. She doesn't care about Justin Jefferson's 1,000 yards or whatever, but she's going to watch him talking to his mom about, you know, eating some gumbo or something like that. And the list goes on. There's many, I think there's like 7 or 8 fan personas, and they're getting more of them. So we have a lot of people dedicated. I don't want to say nobody's like dedicated to a specific fan persona, but through their job and their description, whether they're working on studio shows or the long form content or the short form content, and like where it lives. So like the vertical content and TikTok, people kind of almost by default are more catered towards a specific fan base and fan demographic. One of our former players, he is currently on American Idol, Blake Proehl. He's great. I, since that was Helmets Off thing, that was a long form content piece that I did. But our original team takes it and cuts it, and our broadcast team like takes it and cuts it to like push it out towards other audiences as well. So it's kind of like it's maybe somebody's specific project, but then from there, everyone is taking from it to cater it towards their, I guess, fan demographic in the way that that fan likes to consume content.
I love hearing this. I feel like teams have a long way to go. A lot of teams have a long way to go. It seems like you're further ahead than quite a few. Even though there's challenges along the way of how things work and how they operate, it's cool to hear how, like specifically how things get broken down and who's in charge of what and how you all share content, but it needs to be catered to the specific audience and you're focusing on all that kind of stuff. So when it comes to something on the plane after the team beats the Buffalo Bills in dramatic fashion, was that you with the chains? Do you get to travel with the team?
No, I do get to travel with the team. The chains thing, I say no, I wish, because I don't know if it's like a league rule or a Vikings rule, I don't know, but we can't do content on the plane. No cameras on the plane, so only like on the tarmac. So that was like more our social team, and Zach Royce is our, I think he's our senior manager of social. And one of our players was on live, and I think somebody like got the notification, screen recorded it, because obviously we fly with an international plane because of our, because the team size is so big. I assume all of the NFL teams fly on a plane of that size, but basically all of our players are like way up front, and, you know, coaches and staff and athletic training, and then content people are like far further in the back. And I was not on that Buffalo trip, but people say that like nobody even heard the commotion, like because of the plane size. So they didn't even know this was coming out until like the next day, and they saw all these videos. But yeah, no, I wish that was me. That looks like a lot of fun, but that also is just like a testament to the Vikings locker room. And obviously that was 2 years ago, but I don't think the culture has changed. So
when it comes to access, I assume that you have to be pretty looped in on things going on off the field to cover them and all of that, understanding what the players' initiatives are and what they care about and being in the community. What goes into all of that admin and understanding who's going to be where, when, and planning?
Yeah. Firstly, I would say it's just like a lot about relationships, and the, from ownership to coaching, to our general manager, to our PR team is all very, like open and trusting with access to our players, obviously to a certain extent. But in my situation, like, you know, we can go into the locker room and chit chat with some of the guys. And I have a good relationship with like some of our players' wives and obviously the players themselves. So you get that from like talking with the players. Community relations is a huge like starting point. That's honestly the time where I get the probably the most FaceTime with our guys whenever they're at community events, and that's kind of something they're passionate about. And then our editorial team is good with like just asking them questions both on and off the field, and then hearing from there. Our PR team is great with communicating, you know, Harrison Smith is really into cars, so is our Hall of Fame safety from the 70s or 80s, Paul Krause. We could do something with that. And then from there, VEN as the content team can take it and run based off of like an idea from our PR team. So it's really just about building relationships with the players and staff so that they're looping us in. But then it's also like sometimes we just come up with ideas like, oh, it would be really cool to talk about like the players' culture and how they grew up, who would be a good fit for that. And then sometimes it's going to our PR team and being like, is there any players that like are really vocal and passionate about their culture or music or fashion or whatever? And then our PR team's like, oh yeah, Brian Asamoah would be great. He's Ghanaian and he is very passionate and vocal about it. He comes with his Ghanaian flag, you know, everywhere. So that's kind of how we get access and understanding to our players off the field.
As a person who is a former athlete, kind of young in the field, what would be some advice that you would give to those who are looking to get in this space? You know, you have a group who think like, oh, I just got to get in and then I'll just, you know, the relationships will come. Building relationships the right way. What is the right way and how do you nurture that?
Yeah. I think one piece of advice, if I could tell my like 20, 21 year old self, would be like, understand and accept that not every relationship is for you. So, you know, reach out to them on LinkedIn, have an informational interview. But like, if you don't vibe, you don't vibe, and that's totally okay. Like, you can stay connected with them on LinkedIn, but that doesn't mean you need to be hitting them up once a month. So be self-aware to know if a relationship is one that is serving you or not, and beneficial. But then also, I would say, don't take for granted the relationships that you might not see. So for example, the league is so small to where I, you know, have met two full teams of Vikings players over the past 2 years. And now with free agency and moves, you know, basically there's people on lots of different NFL teams that I know and have relationships with. And same with like the work side as well, not just the players. People are moving, and also everyone knows everyone. The sports industry is really small. So even like your peers, and I don't want to say people below you, but like if you're a coordinator, the interns, they might get a full-time job with another team that you might want to end up on eventually. So just really nurturing those relationships and having them be authentic and not forcing them, and just remembering that like you can be cool with people, but that doesn't mean that you're gonna like be besties with them, and like let that be okay.
I feel like back in my day, gosh, I sound like a grandma. Like it truly was, oh, you're shooting for this one thing, and that's the only place that it went for and lived. And now content is just like, it's like a flower. It blooms and it has all these petals that go in all these different places. And, you know, I'm curious, Malia, do you have a favorite platform that you spend a lot of time on or get a lot of inspiration from?
Yeah. My super Gen Z answer is TikTok. I love TikTok. I think
we love TikTok.
We love TikTok. So obviously like the Vikings have a TikTok, and then I have my personal TikTok, and the For You pages on both of those are very different. And I love getting inspiration from both sides because, well, part of the reason I love TikTok is the ability to challenge myself, specifically like with the Vikings platforms, to try different things. We can't post on-field highlights to our personal TikTok pages. So how do we have to use our TikTok to our advantage is basically using everything else, which is a wide umbrella, but sometimes the vast amount of options is almost like can be intimidating. So that's why I love TikTok, is there's so many different like directions and areas you can go. And with the For You page and the algorithm, like there's so many different people that you can touch. So really on TikTok, it's like, well, let's just try it. See who we can reach. And the ability to go viral is awesome on TikTok as well. I really like TikTok and the vast amount of options it provides.
How do you know, with that in mind about TikTok and having all, how do you kind of hone it in and not try to do 1,000 things and do 100 things like really well?
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. How do I pick and choose? I mean, it is about like trying things. So like a year or two ago, I was like, I think it'd be cool to like mic up one of our players' wives for a game. So tried it, did it, and it performed really, really well. So we did it again this year, and it continues to perform really, really well. So like that's something that at this point, you know, we'll be coming back next year, and hopefully it continues to perform well. And basically we'll probably keep doing it until it doesn't perform well. But then, you know, that's just one thing. So it's kind of like, well, what else can we do? And specifically on TikTok, what audience are we trying to reach? You know, it's a really vast audience on TikTok and the options, but whenever I'm making decisions about which content pieces to execute, it's always who's it for and why does it matter? And that you know, brings the options down, because, you know, you can have a great idea, but if nobody like cares about it or it's not going to make any type of impact, then why do it? You know, it has to matter. So it's basically like we have all these ideas, but then it's, you know, analyzing and thinking about like, well, who would want to watch this? Is this the audience that we want interacting with our brand? Obviously, usually based off the ideas, it's yes, we do want this new audience, whether that be female or Gen Z or young women or younger boys that are playing football. So it's basically just like about why are we doing this content? And I feel like if you can't say the why, then the content probably isn't good enough. So
that's a good,
I love that.
That's a good one.
That's really, I mean, I think it helps the way you broke that down so eloquently, because it's like, it's two simple questions that help inform your decisions as a producer. And I'm curious, what are the steps? And let's take the example of miking up.
Wow, oh, Karina, you set it off.
What the heck? I don't. Clearly, I'm excited about miking up. I'm excited about miking up players wise. Fireworks. That I like Baby launched the freaking. What is it called? The iOS.
Fireworks.
Justin, as an aside, I know you joked about this before, but absolutely, all my like reactions like that has to go into something. It's in a reel at some point. My question was, it sounds like those two questions help inform your decisions as a producer, but in the example of the, you know, player's wife being mic'd up, what are the steps that you take in order to like truly execute? Because, you know, sometimes there's PR involvement, you know, planning the day and the schedule and timing and camera operator. Take us through kind of a step-by-step what you do to prepare for a shoot like that.
Yeah. So thankfully by now, the players' wives miking them up is kind of almost like a uniform routine. Like we've done it enough. But in the beginning it was, I remember I went to one of my coworkers, my older coworkers, and I was like, I have this idea. I think it would be really cool to mic up. The first person we did was Caitlin Thielen, Adam Thielen's wife. And I said, I want to mic up Caitlin Thielen. How? And we just like talked about many different ideas. At least at the Vikings, at US Bank Stadium, all of our families are in a specific section. And it's, you know, in the lower bowl. It's not like they're in a suite, unless the families choose to purchase a suite for the year. And it was like, okay, well, we could do like a really long lens from across the stadium, but then what mics could we use that wouldn't interfere with the on-field mics for our players being mic'd up? How are we going to make sure that the we ended up using a GoPro. We do use GoPros, which is really easy. Just usually clip them onto the seat in front. Well, how do we make sure the GoPros don't die? Thankfully, we use Rode mics, Rode wireless mics, and they last like 7 or 8 hours. So I've never had a problem with that. And then also after doing it so many times, like it used to be like with Caitlin, I met her at their house and like rode with them to the game. And now it's like, I'll meet you like sometime during warmups and I'll put the mic on you and grab it from you right after the game. So it's, you know, gotten shorter to, you know, every time we do it, we learn like, okay, like the meeting at the house was cool, but probably not necessary to do every single time. So yeah, now we work with our ticket sales person, see if he can get us an open seat right in front of the family members, to put the GoPro in. And even if he can't, we've like figured out a way to kind of like stick it in between seats and it doesn't bother anyone. And we have our player relations. I think her title is like manager, senior manager of player relations. But she's mainly working with our Vikings home team, which is our coaches and players, wives, families, partners. So usually I'm trying to think of the process. with all of my content, I say if the person doesn't want to do it, we don't want them to do it because, you know, it's not going to be fun. So I work with her. She knows a lot of the wives better than me and be like, okay, who would be a good option? I mean, we actually got to mic up our head coach's wife for one of our preseason games last year. So I can use that as an example, because that's obviously a little bit more high profile, where we needed to get our senior director of comms in and make sure it's okay with coach and all that. But basically I'm like, I want to do Leo O'Connell. I think that would be great. I'm going to talk to John, our senior director of PR. And so talk to him. I said, I want Leo O'Connell. Is that okay with you? And he says, yes, but let me talk about it with Kevin O'Connell, our coach, and go from there. Got word that KO is okay with it as long as it's all seen. Then we reach out to Leah and say, would you like to be mic'd up? This is what it entails. She says, yes, obviously meet her at the game, get the actual content, and then edit it. And then I always send it to our PR team to get it approved from our PR team. And then I send it to the wife, make sure she's okay with all the content, and then it can go out. But when it's not like super, I don't want to say super high profile, but with other players and stuff, sometimes it's directly reaching out to the wife and then casually in the locker room, hey, CJ, did Steph tell you she's going to be mic'd up this weekend? Like, you cool with that? And he's like, oh, yeah, whatever. It's okay. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
A lot of people involved, which is good. But it takes a long time, I'm sure, from start to finish.
Yeah. Yeah, to a certain extent. I think it's basically just like making sure the right people know about it so that nobody gets like blindsided or upset, because I feel like the way I just described it, it seems like a big production and a lot of people, but it doesn't like really feel that way. But it's really just like our PR team, our wives, like coordinator, and the wife and the player, usually, I guess. Mm-hmm.
So you have the honor of working in the NFL, long, prestigious, like, history in sports as a woman in Minnesota. What is that experience like? Like, and how much pressure or honor do you carry throughout, you know, the year and days of, you know, that responsibility of being a woman in the NFL?
That's a good question. I'm actively aware of my position as being a woman in the NFL, but also being a Black woman in the NFL. Hmm. I'm very like DEI and DEI content is one of my like passions that I like to go after, as well as getting more, I would say more so specifically people of color into sports. So I'm actively aware of the privilege and platform I have, and I try my best every day to be a good representative of women and women of color in the league. So it's definitely a huge honor. But I am hoping that in the future it doesn't like have to be, you know. I hope it's more normalized 5-10 years from now for women, Black men, people of color, minorities in general, to be in these positions in sports. So I'm aware of my position now, but I am actively trying to almost like make it less niche with what I do.
It's definitely gotten better, but how much work do you think that it is for this to, like, you mentioned you're hoping that it doesn't have to be a thing, like, oh, she's a woman in sports, instead of, hey, she's a producer in sports, and that's kind of
period.
We're gonna period. Put that, we have to put that on Instagram. But like, how far are we as a, you know, as a sports culture, as a society from that being the, you know, we talked about on one of the last episodes, you see Sabrina Ionescu against Steph Curry in, you know, All-Star weekend. And instead of it being, oh, man versus woman, and she's doing this, instead of like, you know, two basketballers just going head to head, and it's not, oh, this is for the women and all that. Like, it's necessary now, but how far are we from moving the conversation to it's sports? And whether you're a woman, man, child, grown up, we're going to enjoy the sports and not try to pick it apart because it's, you know.
I think it kind of depends on like who you ask. In my opinion, we still have a ways to go, because I kind of think more so about like the fans.
Mm.
And when people hear that I'm a video producer for the Vikings or work for the Vikings, like, I don't know how many times, or even like when I'm like on the travel party, like in the team hotel, oh, are you dating or mm-hmm. married to one of the players?
Mm-hmm.
No, like even if I was, I wouldn't be here right now. Like, mm-hmm. But that's kind of where I think the biggest growth needs to happen, is the idea of the fans and the people who are uninformed. And obviously in the building too, but like, to me, I like the players and the coaches are some of the most respectful people to me in the building, like in terms of being a woman in sports. And, you know, they don't like treat me much differently than anyone else, which I appreciate. And I feel like day to day, being a woman in sports like isn't really a thing, because I mean, the Vikings have, I want to say almost like 50% women, at least on the business side, which is great. But I think there needs to be a lot of more education and growth of even like the roles that women can play in sports. I'm not a cheerleader and I'm not a wife, and those are both great things to be. But I am a producer. I can be a photographer. I can be head of social. I can do ticket sales, accounting, marketing, partnerships. I can even be a coach. Like, that part. Let's, mm-hmm. you know, our head dietitian is a Black woman, and I am obsessed Amazing. With her because, like, how incredible.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like people still view specifically the NFL as like a man's sport, and specifically on the fan side, like a white man's sport. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's still some growth to do from the fans on that side.
Which is ironic. It's ironic too, because it's like you have, if you think of it from a marketing standpoint, every single organization, business, whoever, their goal is to get more customers to their product, whatever that is. And it's like, you know, targeting as many people as possible is always the goal, right? And I feel like I love hearing that you're passionate about DE&I. And I think it's very timely, at least for me personally, because with all of the news, you know, around Florida making the decision to remove their DE&I departments as a whole.
State of Texas as well. And Alabama and Oklahoma.
Yeah, not just Florida, for sure. Not just, but to me, Florida's top of mind, because just yesterday I read about, you know, Emmett Smith's like response to it, where, you know, and I'm looking now, I pulled it up. It's got on Twitter 1.3 million views. And Emmett Smith, for those who don't know, I'll set it up, but he's basically, you know, saying he's disgusted with the decision. It's detrimental for academic studies and athletic programs to get rid of this. And I feel like I empathize with what you're saying, Malia, because it is, there's a lot of work that still needs to be done within like different organizations, within different leagues, but also as a society, yes. right? Like it's like, and it's as a person of color, it's almost like really frustrating. And sometimes I get exhausted, like reading these headlines, because it's like, wow, I know I matter. I know that my perspective and having other people's perspectives and diversity matters. But wow, like people, like other people don't feel that way. I'm curious if like, if you feel the same way in any capacity, or y'all feel the same way. But sometimes it's like exhausting. Like,
yeah, it's very, very exhausting.
I like physically can't understand. Like, I feel like I try and, you know, put myself in other people's shoes. I physically cannot understand people who are anti like DEI and stuff like that. Because like you were saying, we want to market to all of these different audiences.
Is one question, but continue.
That is a good question.
Continue. I guess you're right. Well, we say we do.
Smart business people do. Yeah.
But like you say, like, but do we? And I'm like, you know, people say we do, but maybe we don't actually. But I'm also like, why? Like, that's extra money in these business people's pockets if people see themselves and can relate to whatever you're trying to sell them. Plus, like, for me, it's like different perspectives can make a work culture so much better. Like, it's truly crazy to me. Like, why would you want 10 people from the same area that look the same and have the same experiences doing work? I really just don't get it. Okay.
It comes down to a few things, right? We as a country are still in a space where it's getting uncomfortable, because for so many years we've been allowed to just, you know, we're over here, you're over there. We want you to spend here, but we don't want you to have any, you know, it's almost a shut up and dribble, right? We're allowing you into these spaces as a woman, as a person of color, as whoever, but don't say nothing. Don't say anything. And so that's one side of it. The going back to Karina's point is, you would think that as a business person, more money is the goal. Doesn't matter who it comes.
Larger audience.
More money. If you have an audience of 5 million being closed-minded and you open your mind, chances are, studies show that if you open your mind, you're going to reach more people. Whether that's, you know, 200%, 300%, 2,000%, whatever, you're going to expand, which means more money, which means more results, which means, you know, everything. But, you know, when you have a part of society that has financially had more influence, and then they start to say, oh, well, I'll pull out my money because this or that, you have to decide, does a few people giving you, you know, millions of dollars, is that better than 5 million people giving you, you know, smaller sums of money? Which, so we got a long way to go. But I think also the words DEI, you know, these acronyms, DEI, CRT, all of these people like run from those.
Critical race theory, for those unfamiliar.
It's like, oh, we're tired of hearing about this. It's like, are you, you know, we're tired of being discriminated against. And, you know, that's, do you want to trade? But with that being said, you get to work in the NFL and like bring honor and represent for a large population of people. You know, little girls, girls of color, white girls, Hispanic girls, like all types of people who can see you as a representative. Does that make you excited that when little girls or little boys or whoever come to these games and they see you and it's like, wow, like this is different?
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you were saying that, I'm like, sheesh, like that's a lot. And that's, you know, a lot of pressure, but it's so exciting because, I mean, I feel like representation is huge, and it matters. And I love, you know, being on the field and getting content. And then there's like little fans in the suite, like, what are you doing? And I'm like, oh, I'm taking photos and videos of the players. And they're like, oh my gosh. And seeing that impact that I can have, is awesome. And then also like being in the position to help the Vikings use the much bigger platform than mine, use their platforms for that representation, is super impactful. And I, like I said, I'm actively aware of the privilege and responsibility that comes with it. But I think it excites me because I would love to be the representation for younger women coming into sports. I mean, I'll shout out Karina right now. Like, I reached out to her in college while she was at the Warriors, and we, you know, talked, and she was, I think, probably the first woman that I ever saw, you know, on the court with a camera, doing what I thought I wanted to do and could do. So like her representation and her being in that role was an impact on me, because I mean, you can always be the first to do something, but that's a lot harder and more intimidating, than seeing Karina and saying, I can do what she's doing because she's paving the path for me. And it's really, really special that path can continue on, you know, in different forms through me.
Where are the fireworks?
I love it.
We're applauding. Where are the fireworks?
You got me crying in the club. You got me crying in the club right now.
Literally, I was getting emotional. I was like, you need to pull it together.
That's no, awesome. Not the time.
No, I think it's beautiful. And thank you for sharing that. And I think it's, for all of us, it's kind of cool because in a way we may have impacted somebody that we know of and have met. And there's a lot of people that we probably have impacted that we've never met, right? Or they saw somebody or they saw something that we posted and they're like, wow, I want to do that. I think that's the beauty of the creative industry, is like, you know, our impact is probably larger than we mm-hmm. all realize. So I appreciate that. Yeah. And I'm proud of you, and like, you are killing the game and have been since college. And you took something that you just said, you know, I might have been interested in, and you ran with it. And now you're running things and doing amazing work for an incredible, incredible, like internationally known brand. So shout out to you.
All right. That was the heavy part of the conversation. hold on. My headphones got
Did we book her for enough time?
Okay. There we go.
I know. I was going to say, are we over? I feel like.
So that was the heavy part of the conversation. Now let's get into a little fun. So let's talk gear. What kind of gear are you working with?
I feel like you're like my parents. Not yet. Not yet.
No, you pulled up the phone. What kind of gear do you like to use? Are you like married to a brand, and what are you using for editing purposes? Like, what's your day-to-day of what you use?
Yeah, I would say I'm married to Premiere in the Adobe shout Creative Suite. Adobe. Yeah, so shout out to
I'm
Adobe.
Staying silent. I'm over here.
No comment. No comment. On that side, on the camera side, I definitely prefer Sony. The camera that I use right now is a Sony A7 R4, but I love the FX3, FX30, FX6s, and the like. I really want to get a Sony A1, just like classic. So definitely a Sony girl. I've used Canon in the past and like no hate, but
this is perfect. Last episode, two episodes ago, we were talking about Canon. Now you're promoting Sony. We're trying to just keep the playing field even.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a Sony person. I think their coloring is incredible. I love the, I just think their stuff is super smooth. And at least for me, I've always found like the menu features to be a lot more like self-explanatory than
you're
Canon.
Probably in the minority on that, but you know, most.
I was going to say sometimes, well, maybe you've gotten used to it by now. I do. I feel like once you get locked in on Sony's menu, you're like, okay, I get it now. But it take for me.
Most people are like, oh, I hate the menu. And I'm like, just learn it. It'll be fine.
Just learn. Just figure it out. Fine. Yeah, I also like the Rode mics, the Rode Wireless Go 2. And then I actually just got the Rode Wireless Go Pro. Those are super easy. I like those. I actually just got the DJI Osmo Pocket 3 and have been using that. That's been a fun little new toy for me. But yeah, I would say Sony, Rode, and Adobe is the tried and true for me.
I think she just knocked out the 30 seconds that you were going to ask right about Karina.
Oh, no. Now she gets to lock it. See, I kind of helped her with this, what is coming up.
Well, but we can mix it up. I can mix it up. Absolutely. I can mix it up, the question. Or we can do it twice and we can see what we like better. So with that, we have a game for you. And we've been playing this game with several of our guests. So without much context, because we want it to be off the top of the dome as quick as possible, you have 30 seconds to list off as many items, tools, resources, things that you rely on a daily basis. It can be software, hardware, everything in between. Ready, get set, go.
God, I'm scared. I use, what's the brand? I use my SanDisk hard drives. I used to use Lacy, not so much anymore. Sony A7R4. I use a 24-240 lens. I like the 7200 lens, 1635. ND filters for when it's sunny out. I use those all the time during training camp. Premiere Pro, After Effects, not as much. Photoshop, Rode Wireless Go 2 with the lobs, Rode Wireless Pro.
That was good. That was
scary.
You got it done. 11 items. 11 and a half.
That was impressive.
How did I compare to others?
There at the,
you did pretty well.
Top two.
Top three. Two. Yeah. Top five. Okay. Top two, yeah. Easily. Easily. But we could remix the game. And you might not have as much, you know, leeway or prep time. Same game, same concept. You have 30 seconds to list off all of the things that you do for fun that have nothing to do with work.
Ooh.
In the off season.
You sound
ready,
really lame.
Get set, go.
Travel. I have friends and family all over the country, so I travel a lot, try to travel as much as I can. I like to pick up freelance work. I don't know if that counts, but I work for the NCAA, sometimes trying to work for Big Ten, doing other stuff. What else do I like to do? I like to watch reality TV. I like to work on puzzles, jigsaw puzzles, and paint shoes and sew. I like to shop and burn candles. I like to make my own candles. I like to drive.
11.
I like that last one. To drive.
Hey.
You like to drive. Listen,
I love it.
We need to drive every now and then. It feels good to just like zone out. Not zone out while you're driving, but you guys know what I mean.
Yeah.
That was a good
list.
Absolutely.
I'm like.
Wait, talk to me about the sneaker game and painting. That's cool.
Where are they? These are like my prized possessions. I've painted a few pairs of shoes, but these are my favorites. So they just came as like white plain Dunks, and they had this like sticker that says the future is equal. So these are like my, I love these. And then I wanted to spice them up, so I painted like, just, my mom's a first grade teacher, so she just like gets paint from her school.
splatter painted them, obviously did the whole like taping to make sure, you know.
That's cool.
Also last year, a couple of years ago, we've done staff My Cause My Pleads for the Vikings. So I have worked on those and I have not started yet, but I really, a big goal of mine is I want to buy like some plain Air Force Ones and then paint all of the, or most of the players, like their foundations and organizations, on the shoe. But I guess I have to kind of wait until the roster is final.
The only reason I have a visual of your painting your shoes with the tape is because of Love is Blind.
Yeah. Nice way to tie
so
that
good.
In.
That is a good point. Like you have to describe if you know without seeing it. Absolutely. On a podcast. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. When did you get into painting?
Honestly, not too long ago. I feel like I've always like painted here and there, and it's always been fun. But I haven't like. And I wouldn't say I do it like super, super often. I try and do like one or two pairs of shoes a year because I specifically like to paint shoes. And, you know, I can't be buying new shoes every week to paint. So, but yeah, I would say like a year or two ago probably is when I like actually was like, wait, this is a lot of fun. I'm going to do this now.
Awesome. All right. We've taken 2 hours of your time. So I'm going to end with one question. This is a heavy one. Not really.
Oh, good.
To all the young ladies, little girls, aspiring people who want to work in sports and be creative, biggest piece of advice to inspire them?
Biggest piece of advice would be to create. I always say people are like, what should I do to get into sports? And I always say like networking is important and knowing people and hard work and stuff, all of that is important. But at the bottom line, what you can control is what you create, how much you create, and the quality of what you create. So try new things, have it fail, learn from it. Just keep creating, building your portfolio, and eventually where you're supposed to end up, you will be there. So just keep going, keep creating.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. Special thanks to APM for providing the music used in the podcast today. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the sports creative community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're not a member and would like to join, go to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.